I was like, okay. There's a couple characters that I think are probably for realsies dead.
Okay, you've already gone. You've already gone into it too much.
Nah, people know that characters are gonna die.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. All the way from San Diego, California, Keith Foster is here with me today, speaking across the airwaves.
Wow, you drug that out. And with me is Cassidy Robinson from Los Angeles, California. See, that's how you do it. Nice, simple, succinct.
Yeah, that's definitely always the dynamic here. It's me going too long.
Yeah, kind of, actually. My favorite thing is when we do like a quick recap or a quick countdown or whatever. You always take like fucking 10 minutes per.
Well, sometimes, you know, sometimes you just gotta,
see,
you gotta
even
frame
this,
it. You gotta
even
build
this,
it.
Even this, you're over explaining.
You are. Okay, let's stop doing that. We'll get into the first segment of the show, which is what have we been watching? What are we calling it again?
Live, die, repeat. Consume, obey.
What was it?
Consume, obey.
Consume, obey, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna make like a fun little sound bite, but I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't make any of the ones you suggested last week either.
You son of a bitch. How's this podcast ever going to get to the top of the iTunes charts?
Not this way. Do you want to start? I can start. On Friday, I went to a midnight showing over at the New Art in Santa Monica of the horror film 1989 Horror Film Society, which I believe me and Richard talked about to some length on our Halloween episode when you couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I listened to that actually.
Oh, how about that? I got to see the movie in theater, which I've never seen on a big screen before. And the director, Brian Yuzna,
isn't it just like a bunch of blobby dicks like melting together or something?
There's a decent amount of that. Yeah, I mean. It's like a 80s like satire horror film, not too unlike They Live, but takes place in Beverly Hills, and it's a lot slimier. But anyway, the director Brian Yuzna was there and did a pretty lengthy Q&A, lengthy considering it was midnight when we were starting, and I was kind of feeling my age a little bit, where I was like, you know what, like, can we, like, wrap this up and just get on with the movie already?
Oh, he did the Q&A before the movie?
Yeah. Which, yeah, it was cool, it was fun and everything, and he had a lot of, you know, interesting insights, and...
Yeah, I don't do midnight movies no mo.
Well, for that I would. Like, Avengers...
I just can't.
To go see, like, Avengers Infinity War or whatever, like, no, I'm not gonna go, like, deal with a bunch of, like, excited fanboys and whatever, but
well, actually,
cult movies, sure.
Actually, they stopped doing midnight premieres like that, largely so that they open earlier now,
right? So that people actually go.
Well, so they can make more money, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's actually largely because of the Dark Knight Rising shooting.
Well, I think ever since then they started doing like Thursdays at a. You know, noon or something like that.
Yeah, they don't do the midnight ones anymore.
Yeah, they just kind of have a longer lead up to a release date now. But anyways, that's definitely where I caught my cold. And I spent the rest of the weekend in bed. So that was that. How about you?
So for your consume obey, you got the consumption.
A little bit, yeah.
Hey. So for my things, I'll do a couple. Because I like to do non-movie stuff, because I feel like the whole rest of the podcast is movie stuff.
Sure.
So I try to think outside that box.
Hey, I've been backlogging a concert story for like 2 weeks because other stuff just keeps happening, but keep going.
All right. So I finally got a Nintendo Switch. And, okay. It's the newest Nintendo system. I have not been interested in a Nintendo system since they went Wii and like have to get up and move to play video games. I don't think so. But I really want to get the new Switch because it's sort of like a hybrid tablet system thing.
Yeah, I still don't understand it. I've played one and I still don't understand it.
Yeah, so it, basically it's like a tablet that just very easily you can plug into your TV.
It's like a tablet / Game Boy Advance / Wii.
Yeah. yeah. But it has like more, I don't know, has a lot of versatility. But I only got it basically to play The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Okay. Which
I know I'm at like a year late on because everyone was playing it this time last year.
Everybody's already beat it.
Yeah, I'm sure like 5 times over, but I'm just catching up to the Zelda game. So, yeah, it's really fucking good. I'm really enjoying it a lot.
Are you going to beat it? Cuz famously, you are the guy who never beat video games. You just get to the final level and then lose interest.
It's not that I lose interest. It's that if I never beat the game, then I can continue playing it forever. But the dumb thing is I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I put off beating it for so long that I eventually get bored with it that I might as well have just beaten it and got that satisfaction. But because of that, I've never been terribly invested in like the story elements of video games.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not even true. I've beaten quite a few games, and usually Zelda I finish to completion.
Okay, so is that kind of like when I is that kind of like when I like am in the mood to watch a movie and then I'll throw it in and I'll watch all the special features, then I feel like I got my fix, I don't actually have to watch the movie anymore?
No,
it's like pretty much exactly the same as that, right? Like a total one for one the same.
Not really, because you're just not watching the movie. It's more like when you watch a series, but you put off watching like the
last episode,
season finale, so that it'll never be done.
Right. Or in my case, the last like 4 seasons.
Yeah.
Usually.
I think that is more due to laziness than anything else.
It kind of is. I'm not going to lie. All right. Well, today we are going to be talking about Avengers Infinity War, obviously. And at the end of the show, we're going to be reviewing Wind River in our Netflix homework, which is Avengers adjacent.
Yeah, it's starring 2 of the Avengers.
Yep, Elizabeth Olsen and
Jeremy Renner, for those of you who don't know Cassidy's cool talk.
Everyone knows.
I don't know that they know J-Ren.
Let's go ahead and get into the movie news.
Movie news. Talking about that movie news.
I guess it's the only really big news that's been going on, or that's been released in the last little bit. It has been confirmed by Hollywood that there will now be 2 Star Trek movies coming out. They're going to continue, I think, with the J.J. Abrams verse, the Bad Robot Star Trek movies. There'll be another sequel to that. And there is talks of another one. Everyone's assuming this is that Mystery Tarantino project. And it's a little unclear so far if they're going to come out around the same time. It's like 2 just separate Star Trek universes. Or if one is a sequel to another and they're just both in development at the same time, or what the hell's going on?
Yeah, maybe they're letting Quentin Tarantino's be like more of a standalone thing so he can sort of fuck with it however he wants. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It looks here that the next director of the Abramsverse version is S.J. Clarkson, who has done a lot of TV, specifically Vinyl, Jessica Jones, and The Defenders on Netflix.
Okay, one of those is good.
You know, I never watched either Jessica Jones or The Defenders. I know Jessica Jones is supposed to be, like, pretty good.
Yeah, Jessica Jones is really good. The Defenders was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, but it still had some pretty cool stuff. And Vinyl, I only watched the first episode, and it was kind of meh.
It was whatever. Yeah. How much money, if you were to place a bet, how much money would you be willing to bet for or against this Tarantino Star Trek movie actually happening?
Oh, a dollar amount, or would you want like a percentage?
Dollar.
Like, if I had a spare hundy, that's what that means.
No, I know. I lost.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen. This news makes it sound even less likely to happen.
Yeah, because it sounds like they probably met him and they were like, all right, let's get going on this. And he's like, yeah, I'm working on a movie right now. And like, here's 1,000 ideas.
And they're like, we need to make another Star Trek. Our dicks will fall off, Quentin. And Quentin's like, yeah, your dicks will fall off. That'll be great. I don't fucking bother me. I'm doing this Charles Manson thing right now. I'm sort of waiting for some of this Me Too business to cool the fuck down. I don't give a fuck. It'd be pretty fucking cool to do a Star Trek movie. Don't get me wrong. It'd be pretty fucking cool, especially one for me, right? I mean, everybody's waiting for a Star Trek movie from me. But it's going to happen on my time, you know, because I'm Quentin fucking Tarantino. All right, Quentin, I guess we'll just make another one while we wait for you. Yeah, sure. I don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's
exactly what happened. 100% just like that. In fact, it was crazy that we got that audio from the studio meeting between Paramount and Quentin Tarantino. I'm not holding my breath for it. It sounds like one of those, there's going to be some documentary like 25 years from now called Quentin Star Trek, and it's going to show all of his like concept art and stuff in the movie that never happened.
Yeah, it'll be called To Boldly Go.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah, it is. In fact, if you're listening, Hollywood, start fucking filming as much B-roll as you can now.
Right.
I do think it's cool though, that S.J. Clarkson is going to be the first female director of a Star Trek film.
Yeah. I mean,
so that, you know, that's something.
That's a thing. Sure.
Honestly, I kind of prefer this. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek.
No, yeah, I feel you. I don't know what that is. Like, I can't see it. And
except Quentin Tarantino.
Right. And it just doesn't sound like something we need particularly at the moment, and or that he should be doing with his time. So, yeah, I don't know. If it ever happens, cool, I guess, but I would actually rather see the continuation of this universe I've already come to sort of like and know.
Yeah, I'm pretty invested in it at this point. I think ever since they relaunched it, I've really enjoyed all of them. So,
yeah, despite what other people have said.
Yeah, fuck other people. This is our fucking movie review podcast. You hear that, other people? Go suck a dick.
All right. What was the story that you had, Keith?
Let me pull it up, because I'm super prepared tonight. Sam Raimi and Alexander?
I think it's just Alexander.
Ugh, fucking spell your name right. Alexander Aja are developing an alligator horror movie called Crawl.
Mm-hmm.
You know what we don't have enough of?
Alligator horror movies?
Yeah.
I mean, famously, there is Alligator. I think
most famously, the best, the Citizen Kane of alligator horror is Lake Placid.
I mean, yeah. Sure. You know.
It has heart and humor and horror.
Yeah. There was a pretty gnarly crocodile slash alligator scene in, what was that movie we liked? Annihilation.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But one alligator scene does not an alligator horror movie make.
That is correct. So, yeah, you know, I would imagine this is probably going to be a take, sort of modern, postmodern sort of take on the Robert Forster movie from, like, whatever it was, 1980. Alligator in the sewer kind of thing, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that all tracks, you know. Sam Raimi has been producing a lot more than directing lately, and he's produced a lot of, like, bigger horror movies, including the Evil Dead remake. And, Alexander Aja is, you know, he came from that whole, like, extreme horror splat pack bunch from, like, the mid-2000s, you know, along with, like, Eli Roth and James Wan and those kind of people. And he made like, High Tension and The Hills Have Eyes remake, which was one of the better unnecessary horror remakes of the 2000s.
I enjoy me some good schlock, like, gore, mm-hmm. dumb monster movie stuff.
Well, I'll say this about him as a director. He also did Piranha 3D, which is very much more kind of in line with this. Sort of a creature feature, dumb, schlocky.
Yeah, but piranhas are tiny and not threatening. Like, ooh, they're going to nibble your toes until you're a skeleton.
Well, Piranha 3D was more or less a horror comedy. It was a big send-up. And the problem was, is actually that they got Alexander Aja to do it, because that's not the type of horror I think he's very good at. You know, if you look at High Tension, which is like French extreme horror, you look at, you know, his other films, he has a kind of a darker, more visceral, gritty edge. And
I would really love
pretty hard against the comedy horror aspect of Piranha. So I don't know now.
Sure. Okay. I would like it if he didn't try to make it a comedy, though. Like, I think...
They just went for it.
Yeah, I think the more sincerely you sort of treat something like this,
mm-hmm.
and let the schlock lie where it may,
mm-hmm.
because it's gonna happen. It's, you know, it's about a fucking alligator.
Yeah.
If I think if you treat that as earnestly as possible, you're gonna just inherently get dumb fun. Whereas if you try to make it a little too, like,
tongue in cheek, know,
yeah, winky at the camera, I'm not as into that.
No, neither am I. I know Piranha 3D has its defenders. I am not one, but I do have a little bit more faith in Sam Raimi as a producer. And not that he's going to, like, really take the reins on it, but I think, like, something kind of cool could come out of that. Last story, and this one has kind of been sort of an up-and-down story personally in my life. MoviePass, the famous movie app that's gotten popular over the last year, ever since they had extremely low prices. So I guess the way it works for people who are not using it is that you pay a monthly subscription. It was $7-something, then it went up, like, really, really high into, like, 50s or 20s or something like that, and everybody stopped using it. And then it came back a few years later at 10-something a month.
Yeah, I think last year it...
Yeah. So now it's, like, 9-something a month. To see 30 to 31 movies a month. You can see a movie a day if you want for less than it costs for, you know, usually a matinee ticket, depending on where you live, which is insanely cheap, like a steal. Like, I feel bad doing it, but not that bad. But there was a bunch of news that came out after their subscription numbers like skyrocketed that they actually can't afford to do any of this. Like this, they found a model for getting a lot of subscriptions, but they hadn't yet really figured out how to profit off of it. Because the way it works is all that money you're not spending, they are. So they're fronting the full cost for all these tickets.
And yeah, well, it was like, I think their model was like, once they hit a certain amount of users, it somehow becomes profitable, but it kind of only works if they get the right amount. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out why the fuck Amazon.com didn't have to pay taxes this year, so.
Well, yeah, that's just called capitalism. But because of that, there was all this news about, like, oh, they're going to go out of business, da-da-da. And then they said, like, any, like, further subscriptions that happen from this point, people are going to be limited to 4 movies a month. And then they put a rule in that said that, you know, you can see movies, but you can't see the same movie over and over. You can only see different movies every time you go.
I've never done MoviePass because I've been sort of waiting for
it to become more of a stable model, yeah, which is what I did. But then I realized, like, this shit's going to, like, go up in flames sooner than later. I want to get as much on this as I can now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And also, I've saved a ridiculous amount of money doing it. So it's been very, very worth it for me. But today, while I was at lunch, I read this on Twitter. MoviePass announces, what are you waiting for? Unlimited movies in theaters for $9.95 a month is back. Any theater, any movie, any day. They shouldn't say any theater because that doesn't include like things like ArcLight. You know, like your upper tier theaters are don't participate. And some like
I guarantee mall chains like don't. A little asterisk with fine print that says you know only participating theaters.
Which is most, to be honest, and most of the ones around me. Even the Landmark on Pico, which is like sort of an upper crust theater.
Yeah, I was surprised. There's this cute little like vintage movie theater on Coronado Island.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of reminds me of the Triplex I used to work at.
Okay.
But like if you took the idea of a Triplex and made it as fucking vintage and fun as possible. There's a little ticket stand out front. They don't have a lot of concessions, mm-hmm. and their chairs are very uncomfortable, which are my biggest complaints. But they actually have really fucking good screens. There's like one big theater and then two sort of smaller, almost private theater booths. And it's just really cool. Place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a small vintage theater. I was really surprised that they took MoviePass.
Yeah, you know, a lot are, because it does bring people into the theater. And even if they're not spending money on the tickets, movie theaters don't make money off of that anyway. They make the money off the concession.
That's why your fucking popcorn bucket is $18.95 plus upsize it for only an extra $2.35.
Right.
And get the Star Wars helmet.
So bucket. even this $9.95 a month is less than like a thing of popcorn and a soda. Yet when this posted on Twitter today, and I was reading the tweets, and this maybe says more about Twitter than it says about this particular story. Mm-hmm. But nobody is doing anything other than bitching, and it's hilarious. I'm going to read some of these.
Oh God.
From Twitter user Malia's Black Friend says, I'm confused. So is it not just 4 movies a month now? You can't just keep going back and forth. And then MoviePass replies, we recently put new safeguards in place to help prevent abuse to our terms and services. And we are now in a better position to return the unlimited plan. She replies, gosh, you could just say yes or no to things. Then another person under
her... I love that she's like, I don't like that you made this better.
Another person under her says, yes, you can see unlimited movies. No, you can't watch the same movie more than once. And then so another person asks, okay, can we see the same movie twice again? And MoviePass replies, no, the one movie limit applies to all of our subscription plans. This falls within the continued effort to limit misuse of our app and has been effective in doing so thus far. He replies, What difference does it make? It's the same amount of money. You don't realize how much trust you're losing from your users. $9.98 a month to see 31 movies. And
yeah,
this,
also,
this is how they act.
Again,
even 4 movies a month, the one that when they dropped down and they were like in dire straits, that was a steal.
Well, yeah, and that's what I don't get, is they're just saying that they improved it from what it from what they just did. Like,
yeah.
Also, I don't see movies in like in theaters repeat that often.
No, I usually I'll see a movie more than once in a theater, maybe 2 or 3 times a year. It really has to impress me. Or if it's a situation where you saw it and then like a few friends you're hanging out with who haven't
yeah,
seen it.
Kinda, I'll do that sometimes.
Yeah, and you're like,
I don't think
I guess.
I've seen a movie in theaters multiple times in literally years.
Yeah, like I said, for me, there's been a couple of times when, like, you know, I'm reviewing it or whatever, and I just have, like, a really bad theater experience, and I couldn't trust my own opinion, because I was like, was it just ruined for me because of a bad audience or a bad projection, bad sound, whatever? So then I'll go and, like, see it again to see if it's the movie's fault or my fault. That happened with me, like, 1 or 2 movies.
You're more dedicated than I am.
I mean, if the conditions are that bad, like just super chatty audience, like phones all over the place, you know, the screen is dimmed because the assholes are only using half the power of their bulbs because they think it saves power and it actually doesn't.
If it's that bad, I'd probably just leave.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times where I've done that too. But anyway, so that's the thing. Let's go ahead and get into Avengers, the main review of the week. And first we have...
I was trying to do the theme.
To do the Avengers theme.
It didn't work.
But first we actually have some audio from Patrick. He has a hot take for us.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Patrick, take it away.
Keith and Cassidy, here is my hot take on the Avengers Infinity War. I had a great deal of fun. That's to be expected. But what was amazing was everyone in the audience also had a great deal of fun. I had never had an audience that was more invested. Okay, but this has nothing to do with the movie at all. At some point, I sat back and realized that, like, this is a really big thing that, like, wide swaths of the population really enjoy. Like, everyone in my theater was really invested in everything happening into it. The point where they were cheering and shouting, and these, like, old people, young people, everyone was clapping. Teenage boys next to me were going nuts, looking at their phone. My wife stayed awake the entire time. It was a real spectacle to be... I mean, I know this comparison is probably going to be made, but it felt like if I was old enough to sit through the first Star Wars trilogy and enjoy that for the first time, this seems like what it was like. People were very excited to see this. Now, my personal take is, finally, this is the time where it felt like the closest you could get to an actual event, a Marvel event, where you had pair-ups and matchups you wouldn't expect, where you had Groot and Thor match up, you had Doctor Strange and Iron Man match up, with Peter Parker as a third wheel. That was all very Marvel maxi-series feel, where like it was a big event and they all went to different team-ups that you don't really see together. It would have been like Ben Grimm the Thing and the Punisher had to go hunt the Hobgoblin down. That's what it felt like, that kind of cool stuff. And finally, I think that Thanos was a very fun villain. Not just fun in terms of, like, he had backstory and pathos, and he had emotional pull, but, like, he was fun. He did fun, crazy stuff. Like, he got to talk a lot. He just didn't brood and stay in the corner like Ronan the Accuser. He was a great villain. That's it. That's all I got. And I got nothing else to say. My wife and I went to H-Mart afterward, and we got moon pie cookies. Or South Korean choco pie cookies. Thanks! Cassie, I know you'll plug my podcast, so I won't have to do it here.
And we're back. I was really happy that in his audio he didn't go too much into plot stuff.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot to talk about here, obviously.
I feel like we should give some kind of a disclaimer up at the top now, because I think this is going to be one of those ones that's hard to talk about without talking about the spoilers.
Yeah, I think we can probably do it. I don't think it's a super spoiler necessary review, but I do want to say if there's anybody else who's interested in offering hot takes for future movies, you can do so at our email, jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. Send us in some a WAV file or MP3. I can plug it right in, just like I did with Patrick. Patrick has a podcast you should be listening to called Make Dad Read Comics. That's why he knows all the things.
Yeah, you're going to plug him later.
I know, but just in case people always turn it off when I start to get into that stuff, I just wanted to put it there. But let's get into it. Keith, describe to me what happens in Avengers Infinity War.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. So every other Marvel movie has led to this point. Thanos is this super powerful space grape, and he is collecting these all-powerful six Infinity Stones. And putting them on this gauntlet, this Infinity Gauntlet. And if he is able to acquire all six stones, he gains penultimate, godlike powers. And I don't mean, I mean capital G, not like gods like Thor and Loki, but like fucking change creation to his will. So all the heroes, minus Ant-Man and Hawkeye, have to come together, to fend off this galactic threat on a scale they've never seen before. And, they all have sort of varying, issues going into it and baggage that has been accompanying them through their various story arcs.
Yes. I mean, by far, I would say what we see here on a storytelling scale is the most ambitious thing Marvel's put together yet. I mean, it was almost like a challenge to try and include as much Marvel universe as they've created so far in one movie and make it work. Yes. Because we even have like a lot of stuff that takes place in space. This is like almost a low-key Guardian sequel for a lot of the movie.
Well, now that you're bringing that up, I think it's important to keep that in mind for this movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we tend to grade Marvel on a bit of a curve...
Yeah, we're grading it on their own material.
Yeah, and so this one I am also sort of grading on even more of a curve, just based solely on the fact of how much they were really going for in this movie, and how much I felt they were basically able to pull off.
Yeah.
You know, now, that being said... There are a few issues I did have with this movie, but overall, I think they did accomplish their goal of making all of these movies sort of come to this climactic point and letting this feel like enough of its own movie.
Yes. Do you want to get into the issues?
Sure. So you mentioned... you were starting to get there with the fact that this starts to feel like a Guardians movie.
At points, sure.
Yeah, and I agree. I think this is sort of Thor 4.0 and Guardians 2.5.
Okay.
And I found myself gravitating towards the space opera aspects of the story the most.
I did too.
I really enjoyed, and also I think it's just a testament to how well done they've sort of rounded out the Guardians characters and Thor as a character, that they were just sort of the characters I was the most invested in.
They're the most stable for this type of story, and they're the most, they lend the most structure.
They also feel the most current. I mean, that's true. Just saw Guardians 2. We just saw Thor Ragnarok. It's been a minute since we've seen
an Iron Man movie.
Tony and Cap. You know, yeah. It's been since Civil War. So I think that is also a part of my personal issues with this movie. I did really enjoy the Tony Stark, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man team up as well.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that fell a little flat to me was the stuff on Earth.
Agree.
Because,
I agree.
Yeah, and I think part of that was because I felt like there was this huge sort of chunk of the story I was missing. I definitely have personal biases towards, like, Captain America. He's one of my favorite characters, and I think his trilogy in the MCU is one of the strongest sort of solo arcs. And so I was a little disappointed that he just sort of shows up with a beard, mm-hmm. and Black Widow's blonde and Falcon looks exactly the same. And they don't really talk about it. They're just like, yeah, I'm back. What? Like, where have you been? What have you been doing? What's with the beard? Why are you dressed in the hobo version of Captain America's costume? Have you not bathed in 2 years? Like, I felt like that story was really underdeveloped, and there was some conveniences there. Like, you know, they just sort of happened to show up at a key sequence to save the day, and, you know, they were like,
yeah, well, but that's kind of how these movies sort of work. I mean, that's, you know,
it felt jarring to me, and that story felt the most rushed. Like, oh yeah, I also know this dude in Wakanda. Let's go there. You know what, yeah. I mean? It felt like that aspect of it didn't really get to breathe. Whereas, the Thanos, they spent a lot of time with Thanos, which I thought was nice, and they spent a lot of time with Thor and the Guardians. So, yes.
And I would say a decent amount of time with Tony, Peter, and Doctor Strange. I think that's a pretty well-developed C-plot.
No, I agree. And again, this is pretty nitpicky, because when I think about it, when I think about the movie as a whole, I'm like, you know, if they had to cut back on some things, I would rather them fill out the other stuff to feel as complete as possible, mm-hmm. which I think they did.
Agreed. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying there. It's a lot of that Earth stuff, maybe even a little bit the Vision and Scarlet Witch stuff.
I'm including all of that.
Yeah, and like the attack in Scotland, which that was a cool set piece.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, fucking all the set pieces were cool. That's sort of, you know, if this movie can't deliver there,
yeah,
cool set pieces, then
you know what I mean. Like even a movie like this, a big science fiction superhero blockbuster, set pieces, a lot of times for me, I'm kind of just waiting for them to get over. Like it's just like just a lot of big noisy stuff happening. But in this movie, there's a lot of hand to hand combat because we have, you know, Thanos's soldiers or what have
the
you.
Black and, Order.
And they look cool, and they, like, you know, they, and one thing, you know, God bless the Russo brothers, because I think they have a real talent actually at taking this stuff, which is so ridiculous and so over the top and so big and so cartoony and colorful, and like being able to like remember to like during hand to hand combat scenes to use a little Steadicam every once in a while, and to let, you know, the impact of the actual violence have a little bit of physicality to it.
Oh yeah. I mean, they are so good. I mean, they proved at Civil War how good they are at juggling all of these
tones,
you know, larger than life characters, and also remembering to ground them. And
yeah, and you know, obviously it's never going to feel real with a capital R, but you can make it, suspend your disbelief in a way that's still enjoyable.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think, you know, one thing I'll say about this movie that I don't normally see about a Marvel movie, is it actually looks really good. there's a lot of these like space vistas. There's a lot of these like planets, these new planets we've never seen, where the camera actually lingers a little bit and sort of soaks up the scenery. And that's something I don't remember a Marvel movie really going into as much, like artful production design. I mean, this movie in particular is a lot more somber than the other movies. And I think there's room for a little bit of sort of artful mise-en-scene that you don't normally have to do in the other movies.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I appreciated that. I'll say this about the movie as far as positives go. When I was going to the movie, generally pretty unexcited. Because I'm going to tell you, like, I've never been a big fan of the Avenger team-up movies. Of those, I think Civil War is the best, but that's technically a Captain America movie, even though I think it's an Avengers movie. But the other two Avengers movies, I think, are just fine. Thanos as a character, I've never been that excited about. Some overpowered giant purple CGI thing. Don't super care. Don't really care about the Infinity Gauntlet. All of the stuff leading along the way about the Infinity Gauntlet, like watching them build this up, has been always my biggest annoyance of it. I just like, please tell your stories. Quit trying to connect to something. So going to this movie, I was like, not dreading it, but I was kind of like, all right. But then, so I built a little list in my head. It's like, this is what I want to see them do. Not stuff like, I hope they include this character or whatever, but like, you know, these are the ways they can make this kind of story better. And one of the things I said was learn to split up the order of events in a way that is good for storytelling. Like, don't just have all the characters team up and go do one thing. It would be nice to have like a good A plot and a good B plot and have different groupings of the characters so that we can kind of develop them individually. And they did that. So I was very happy about that. I said, one of the things I said, like, if you're going to introduce new characters or you're going to get into these newer characters, have them have some sort of stake in the plot and have them have some sort of, further development as characters, not just pawns in the, you know, to play in these big set pieces. And they did that. In particular, I was thinking a lot about Spider-Man and Doctor Strange.
Yeah,
they're pretty new to the family. And
I think they utilize them a lot better than like Black Panther, who
was just kind of there. I agree. And the Wakanda set piece in general is not my favorite. But for the most part, most of the things I wanted them to do on a storytelling level, they managed to do. And of course, the last thing I said was, you got to make Thanos cool. If he doesn't live up to 19 movies of hype that they've been building him up to, if he's just a big guy with a weird face and he's just brooding in the corner, as Patrick said in his hot take, then it's going, all of this is just going to feel like big, empty nothing. And this is not only a really satisfying villain for this movie, but one of the better villains of the Marvel Universe. And, you know, it goes all into, I think, the performance from Josh Brolin. It is heavily made up. There's a lot of motion capture, I believe, that probably went into it, but it's very effective and there's a lot of emotion there. There's a lot.
He's
a fully realized character.
Yeah, their motion capture too has gotten
so much better.
Really fucking good. I mean, it's been kind of nice that they've had the Hulk as sort of a side character that they've, you know, been able to experiment with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think they've got that fucking technology down, because Thanos, he looks pretty real.
Yeah, and I think they probably know how to maximize. I don't know anything about anything. If I had Jen here, we could probably talk a lot more about like what is motion capture and what is composite.
Sure.
But you know, some of the facial stuff looks very real.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Ashley actually thought. She kind of thought that they made Thanos a little too relatable.
No, I disagree with that. But
I don't know. I mean, I kind of see where she's coming from. He is. I think they could have maybe, I don't know, given him a couple more evil with a capital E moments without sacrificing Because I did really like the flashback we got with him. And
that was a good one. If you want to talk about evil with a capital E, the one between him and Gamora, when she was a child, that's like dark.
Yeah, there's some dark shit. I can see where she's coming from. Like when he was on screen, except for a couple times, I was like, okay, I could sort of predict his evil behavior, if that makes sense.
Well, but I think it's interesting about him, and what's interesting about this kind of villain, and I know this is something Patrick's talked a lot about on his podcast and probably on the show when he's been a guest, is the best, you know, a lot of times the best villains are the villains who think they're the hero.
Yes. No, I agree with that for sure. And I think that was necessary for a villain like this.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe adding a little bit of unpredictability to him would have been nice.
Yeah.
Because, like, all of the major evil stuff he does, and, I mean, he does do his fair share of shit. I don't know. And I know this movie was so stuffed already. Like, we didn't see him get the first two Infinity Stones. They sort of mention in passing how he decimates the movie really Xandar.
The movie really starts. Like, it throws you right in the middle. To the point.
I thought the beginning was fucking great. But you know what I mean? Like, maybe we could have seen, like, one or two more flashbacks of him getting the Infinity Stones to sort of catch us up. So we could, I mean, I don't know. We sort of saw the aftermath of him getting the one from the Collector.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, there was some nefariousness that was sort of mentioned off screen, which Marvel has a tendency to do.
Right.
Like, they did that a lot in Guardians with Ronan. Like, they talked about all this evil stuff he was doing more than we were sort of seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know it's a fine line to balance because we also have to have the superheroes do stuff. I just think, and it's already like a fucking 4.5 hour long movie.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know. But I just maybe adding a little bit of an unpredictability to him would be nice because all the evil stuff he did do was sort of telegraphed from a mile away.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, almost literally, because it's they built in this sort of ticking time bomb, essentially, of like, okay, we can't allow him to have, you know, the one stone to rule them all, so we all got to like band together and stop him. But so you know where he's gonna go, you know where he's going, you know what he's after the whole movie. He's not a Loki style villain where he's a trickster or he's going to try and like. You know.
No, I know. It's just like
get himself captured and then have a big release, a big.
And I don't think they should have done that. I just think like, you know, when he kills certain characters, I don't know. I think maybe they could have done a little more with it. I don't know. There were just moments where I was like, I wanted that to sort of emotionally wreck me a little bit more, and it didn't.
We haven't gotten into like how crazy this movie is, but we won't. But I will say
it's fucking crazy.
This is one of the few like Marvel movies where when the theater left, there was like no chatter. Everyone kind of left like they were walking out of a funeral.
Yeah, Ashley was like, "Did Marvel decide to make a DC movie?" which I actually don't agree with that. She was like. It wasn't really funny, and I was like, actually, there was still a lot of jokes and really funny moments. It's just there's sort of this foreboding doom and tension in the movie that I think you could never totally let your guard up.
In a way that works, too, unlike the DC movies that are just, like, brooding without any kind of way of earning it, this movie really goes there... I think in a more in an effective way.
Oh, I agree. I did not expect it to go there.
To go where it goes. To the point where when I left the theater, I'm like, what are they going to do? Also, there's a big like Harry Potter 6 moment in this movie where I'm like, somebody's got some splaining to do because there was some bullshit that just happened. And if they don't explain it, then, like, this is like a Snape-Dumbledore situation where I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, that delights me. I mean, so I don't want to get too spoilery, but this won't be unless you've read the comic.
Okay.
But I told you I started reading the Infinity Gauntlet comic book, right?
Yeah.
The end of this movie happens at the beginning of that comic. Happens in the first issue.
Right. Well, I think I remember reading in movie news a long time ago that Infinity War was going to be like a two-parter or something like that.
Yeah, and I think Marvel shot themselves a little bit in the foot when they announced that.
Right, because at the end of this, they don't say Volume 1 or Part 1 or wait for Part 2.
Exactly. And there is...
And we know that the next movie is an Ant-Man movie, so now I'm really like, what the fuck?
I think it's going to take place before this.
I think it has to. Yeah.
Yeah. And we know for a fact that Captain Marvel takes place in the 90s. They've already released that.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting, though.
Yeah. So the next two movies Marvel's doing are prequels. Well, not prequels, but they just, in their timeline, they take place before this.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get another movie until the next Avengers.
Yeah, any resolution to this.
So we don't get any resolution of the story for another year and a half, which I think is fucking cool.
That's ballsy. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and it's the first time Marvel's really done something like this. Like, they kind of have a cliffhanger ending to Civil War, but not like this. Like, most of them are pretty well resolved.
Yeah, this is definitely, they're taking, you know, whole, not page, but whole chapters from the Return of the Jedi motifs.
You mean Empire Strikes Back?
Empire Strikes Back, as it were. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, I'll say this, as somebody, and maybe expectations have a lot to do with it, but as somebody who kind of walked into this movie, like, already tired, I came out of it enjoying it quite a bit. There's some times it gets a little busy. Not everything is as interesting as everything else. And there's some moments in the movie where I'm already full before the movie's over.
Yeah.
But overall, you know, judging...
But yeah, and also, again, considering that we know that this is going to be that, of a, you know,
right,
the fact that it is a cohesive story at all is amazing to me
and compelling.
Yeah, like that it's not just a big old messy clusterfuck. Yeah, that this isn't Transformers 2,
right?
Alone,
or just that it, you know, is not just like it's not just like utilitarian in the sense that we got to do this movie because we've been building it up. Like, now that they're here, they actually had some fun with it. They actually challenged themselves. They introduced us to new stuff we haven't seen before in a way that was interesting. They have a good villain. All these things. I'm going to give it a B+, A-, somewhere in there. Maybe cusp.
Okay. Before I give my grade, I will say I did have some minor fanboy issues. But I was able to set them aside.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest one was I wanted more from Cap. Wanted more from Captain America. I don't know. It's just, we haven't seen him since Civil fucking War.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the characters I'm most invested in the MCU. And I felt like his story arc was pretty big letdown. That's okay. That doesn't make this a bad movie. So I want to get that out. I don't want to spoil the ending, but I will say it didn't emotionally resonate with me the way I know it has with a lot of audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know it's all going to get fixed.
Right. Well, it's a comic book movie. Like, that's,
yeah. And
like, we grew up with like House of M and all of these major like event things. It's like, this will change everything.
Yeah.
And in two years, it doesn't change anything.
And given the slate of movies that we know are coming out within the next 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm like, it felt like, I was like, okay. There's a couple characters that I think are probably for realsies dead.
Okay, you've already gone into it too much.
Nah, people know that characters are gonna die. Like, I know some people saw this movie and were gutted by it, and I wanted that, but I wasn't.
Right, but I mean, again, we've been reading comic books, and a lot of people haven't.
Yeah, but even the people I know who read comic books were, like, saying they'd lost their shit, and I was like, okay. I don't know, I didn't get that. So, and maybe that's my fault as a viewer.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know what the movie could have done differently to sort of make me feel those moments. And there's a few of them that I was like, I wanted more from that. If that's it, I feel like a little cheated in certain aspects. And I can maybe tell you later off recording what I'm talking about.
So what would you give it?
B+. All right. I mean, it was still fucking cool.
Yeah.
Cool as shit.
It's by far my favorite official Avengers movie. And I would even say, if you want to loop in Civil War, too, because Civil War has some goofy stuff in it. But this movie, I thought, was probably the best team-up movie of the bunch.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really partial to Civil War. But I would give you maybe than the other two Avengers. I mean, even if you're just expecting crazy cosmic action, this movie delivers. I will say, this movie feels sort of the most like Patrick said, like a big crossover event comic.
Yeah, and with the amount of you got to know what all this is. Like, there's no hand-holding, there's no, like, just in case you forgot, like which could be annoying, but actually I kind of appreciated that, like, there's a sophistication here that in the storytelling, not necessarily to all of the, you know, ideas or whatever. But yeah, there's a sophistication here in the storytelling that I definitely don't get from the other Avengers movies, which to me felt like if we're comparing it to comics, like maybe comics from the 50s or like the kid version of Avengers that you buy, not for the actual readers, but to get people to start reading comics.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But also, I want to say on that note that traditionally, those are not my favorite comic book stories.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that also affected my viewing of this movie. The fact that they were able to pull this off and that audiences have been reacting the way they are, like, they fucking won. They won movie universes. No one else has been able to even come close to getting here. And the fact that they got here and actually made a pretty good fucking movie out of it, like, kudos.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so that's that. Let's go ahead and get into the Netflix homework.
Yeah.
And you assigned this to me last week. This is Wind River, sort of an indie thriller. It's written and directed by Taylor Sheridan, who also wrote Hell and High Water and Sicario. And he's definitely kind of building a brand here. He's an actor. He's been an actor for a long time. He's done, like, small parts or been, like, indie film and whatever. A lot of TV. And now he's kind of branched out into writing. And this is his first film that he's directed, I believe. I would kind of compare him, you know, if you look at his sort of filmography, he kind of reminds me a little bit, maybe a little darker, but he kind of reminds me a little bit of John Dahl, who he made a bunch of like noir crime movies in the 90s, like Red Rock West and The Last Seduction. And then sort of disappeared, like went off and did a bunch of TV and then disappeared after that. But this guy kind of reminds me of that. Like, he's sort of building this sort of brand on these type of movies, sort of revenge, action, thriller, Western hybrids.
Yeah, I think Western hybrid is a good term. Like, do you remember the show Justified?
Yes.
It was based off a book.
Elmore Leonard, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Elmore Leonard.
Yeah.
And I remember they, like, some of the reviews said that, you know, Justified create creates this brand new genre. I think it kind of does. And I think that, yeah, this movie, Sicario, like a lot of these sort of modern versions of
film noir with sort of Western highlights. And obviously people like the Coen brothers, have treaded this water before.
It's a little different, but
they have a little bit more of a satirical edge. This stuff's a little bit more sincere. John Dahl, I think, would be a little closer of a comparison, or even, Brian Hegland, who did like Mystic River and Gone Baby Gone. He kind of had like one of these runs in like the early 2000s. But let's get into it. Wind River takes place in Wyoming. A lot of towns that I'm very familiar with being mentioned.
Yeah, that I was not expecting.
Like,
that.
I've driven through these towns.
Weirded me out a little bit.
Yeah, like my grandmother used to live in one of these towns. So this takes place in sort of the buttfuck nowhere in Wyoming, on an Indian reservation. There's a rape murder case that happens there, and we have Jeremy Renner as Corey Lambert, who is a hunter. He hunts...
He's fishing game.
Yes. But his specific job is to hunt predators who wander into people's farms and, like, you know, wolves and mountain lions and stuff that kill sheep and livestock. So he has to go off into, you know, the parts of the woods that nobody should be able to survive in the dead of winter, and hunt these things down himself. In the middle of this case, he had a daughter who passed away some years prior, who was friends with the current victim. And so he kind of gets emotionally pulled into this mystery. And there's an FBI agent who comes in from out of town, played by Elizabeth Olsen. And she's not exactly prepared for the harsh environment, both, you know, weather-wise and as well as just kind of like the cold exteriors and fronts that everyone's putting up against her. And she sort of has to navigate through all of this sort of via Jeremy Renner. That pretty much covers it. Yeah. Wind River.
Yeah. This movie's pretty fucking bleak.
It's a dark one.
Yeah, I will also say right out of the gate, trigger fucking warning scenes.
Sure. Yeah.
Like if you know, sexual assault, sexual violence is something that you're not comfortable with, this is not your movie. It has some pretty graphic scenes in as far as that goes. So be aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not particularly triggered by stuff like that, and there was a scene that I was just like, no, that's too much. I don't need that.
It was rough. Although I will say, in the movie's defense, there's less on camera than your mind is making you think there is, because of the way it's shot, and, you know, to the director's credit, the tension, the way he builds it up.
It's not sensationalized in any way. It's just hard.
It's not a Gaspar Noé kind of experience. But it is.
I didn't get that reference, but that's okay.
He's a guy who did Irreversible. That has an 8-minute rape scene that's with no single take.
Oh, yeah. What the fuck?
With his wife as the main actress, by the way.
What the fuck? It's not that.
And it comes pretty late in the film, too. And I think there's a lot of character development getting to that point.
For sure.
I want to say it's the only flashback of the film. And at that point, because the movie is very rigidly linear, that just structurally, it's a little bit of a breath of fresh air. Which is a weird way to describe a scene like that, but it was.
You get a lot of answers.
It needed that dimension.
Yeah. I agree. And I was just putting that out there for people who are sensitive to that.
No, I understand.
If it doesn't bother you.
That's very valid.
But anyway, the movie itself,
Yeah, it's slow and dark and cold. Like New York is a character in many Woody Allen films, the bleak fuck you landscape of Wyoming in the winter is almost like a character in this movie.
I wouldn't say almost, I would say very much so.
Yeah.
Yes, which is again a very much a Western motif.
Yeah, yeah.
That he's pulling in there.
I will say though that I dug it. Like I think it's a really well done movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of subtext and subtlety, and a lot of telling through imagery, which I always dig.
Mm-hmm.
There are moments though. There are a couple moments where the dialogue starts to tread sort of, genre territory.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That starts to cheapen it a little, almost.
Yeah, it never quite crosses the too much line.
No.
But there are moments where I'm like, it's getting a little like directed DVD here or there in the dialogue.
And it's just like specific lines of dialogue even that I'm like, I wish someone had just like crossed that out on the script.
And
just
I remember reading, I don't know if this is true. If it's not, I take it back. But I remember reading that when Denis Villeneuve did Sicario, he didn't use a lot of the dialogue.
I could see that.
And if you look at the three films, you know, Hell and High Water, this movie, and Sicario is much more minimal in the way that dialogue used. And I think is the best of the three, mostly because Denis Villeneuve is just a hell of a director.
No, I definitely, cause Hell or High Water is the only one I haven't seen of these three. And after this and Sicario, I'm like, I'm on board, you know?
Yeah, that one's the most fun. That's like a fun cops and robbers movie. But but it definitely is sort of in this ballpark, in this wheelhouse.
It also gets a little... I don't want to sound like the PC police, but it does get a little white savior-y for me.
Yeah.
And I think that might just be, you know, Jeremy Renner's playing a cowboy, and it... Mm-hmm. You know, it falls in sort of the tradition of that.
Oh, sort of a John Wayne type character. Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have thought so much about it if it didn't take place on a Native American reservation.
Right. There's a little bit of they don't get to tell their own story thing happening here.
A little bit. And especially the statistic at the end, or the little, what is that? The little footnote or whatever about how
there's no statistics for missing women for Native American women, because like I guess like the government statistics or whoever puts that together for missing peoples doesn't bother.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what the politics is there, but it's definitely fucked up.
Yeah, and to me that just sort of cemented that a little more. Like, at the beginning it says based off true events or whatever, but I think actually, it might have been nice had Jeremy Renner's character been a native.
I kind of agree. I mean, there is, like, his daughter and his wife he's very much tied to this culture. It's a little Dances with Wolvesy in that way.
Exactly. It never... And again, I'm not someone who's sensitive to that usually.
Right.
It occurred
to me. It did occur to me.
And I think there's a textual reading of that that is totally valid.
Right.
Like, I could see, you know, a Native American watching it and being like, okay, you know, of course the white cowboy has to save everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it didn't break it for me. I think that is a nice opportunity. Like, this movie is a nice opportunity where, you know, they could have gone that way, but they didn't. And it's right.
But then you're looking at like however many people who aren't going to see it because you don't have a star or a recognizable star, blah blah blah.
Yeah, and I mean, I know there is a lot that goes into movies besides just the text or whatever. And I don't know how much of a true story this is based off of.
I would imagine this is probably just a, you know, based upon similar stories or like a multiple stories or something like that.
Sure. I don't know if that affected the casting decision or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that I noticed. So,
but then there, I mean, you know, you mentioned that that there's a textual reason there too. But you look at like the villains and or if you want to call them sure. that, or, you know, there's something here going on here about white people coming to the reservation or like white culture and native culture and, you know, sort of the conversation happening there and like using people. And like there is a, if you want to talk about subtext, I think they're the largest, most unspoken subtext of the movie is sort of something generally about the rape of another culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And taking what we think deserves that, what belongs to us.
Well, and specifically the, you know, the predatory nature of white men.
Yeah. On a less grand scale than that, if you want to narrow it even more. And then there is subtext that they do flat out say, like when Jeremy Renner says, you know, I hunt predators. And then Elizabeth Olsen says, well, why don't you help me with this one? It's like, ugh, you didn't.
Yeah.
Don't say that. Like, we get
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Those are those moments I'm talking about.
First scene of the movie when he shoots a wolf. I get it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I, you know, I think there's something to say about that, and there's a reason that they cast Elizabeth Olsen, who, you know, is a very attractive young, woman.
And at first I was a little dubious of that casting when she first enters the movie, cause she comes in like 20 so minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit like, oh, like this kind of jarring. She's so young. And like, there's some actors when they come on and they say, I'm a helicopter pilot, you go, no, you're not. And when yeah. she says, I'm an FBI agent, I go, no, you're not. But that actually, as you get into the movie a little bit more, use that to their advantage.
Yeah. I think she's intentionally presented that way.
Yes.
To make people see her and go, okay, you know, no, you're not. Because, yes. That's
what everyone else is thinking in the movie.
Yeah, that's what everyone yeah. sees.
A sort of a feminist subtext there with her character. There's a decent amount of, in this movie and Sicario, there's a decent amount of Clarice Starling, Silence of the Lambs stuff going on.
I definitely saw that with this a lot.
Which, I think in this movie that gets a little muddied because there's so many other things subtextually happening that maybe that aspect feels a little bit more shoehorned than everything else. But then there is a lot of there is a lot in here about violence against women too. So I don't know. Maybe I'm still kind of juggling that.
I think the movie's intentions were definitely in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there are a few moments where it got away from it a little bit, and maybe a few moments it was like, well, this was an opportunity that didn't happen. But overall, you know, I think this is a pretty gripping crime thriller.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty visceral.
I might have been more on the fence with it if it wasn't for the last, 20 minutes.
Oh, for sure.
Like, once the rubber hits a road, and it really, the impact is very, very effective.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. This is
and I had a lot more faith in what I was sort of curious about up to that point.
Yeah. But I will also say that the movie was interesting enough that it got me there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it definitely needs the third act to sort of bring it home. But I think it does for sure.
All right. Yeah.
Also, I also want to point out that I didn't realize this when I selected the movie, but the soundtrack, the score, was done by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis.
Oh, well, that is interesting.
Yeah, I recognized it almost immediately.
Who worked like, a lot with with John Hillcoat, who is another person sort of who plays in this territory genre-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this movie. I would give it, I don't even know if I really want to grade it. A B, it's good.
Yeah, I would say probably a B plus.
And I would suggest, you know, for people who like those other movies, like Sicario, like Hell and High Water, to check this out and keep an eye out for this writer-director because, you know, hopefully he doesn't burn out like John Dahl did in the 90s and is able to keep making cool movies. Next week for our Netflix homework, I'm going to have us watch the classic documentary Let There Be Light, which came out in 1946. It's about World War II veterans, and I remember reading somewhere, or maybe I saw it in an interview, that this is where Paul Thomas Anderson got a lot of his inspiration for the Joaquin Phoenix character in The Master. So I'm interested to see how it plays on that level, but
interesting. Yeah. All right.
So that's that. That's the show. If anybody has anything they want to hit us up with or discuss that we've discussed here, you can do that at our email at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @jabberpodcast. Find us on Instagram at @jabberpodcast. We are also on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can find me individually at BC Cassidy. You can read my reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. I'm in between computers right now, so they haven't been going up as fast as they normally do, but once I have that figured out, they'll go up. And where do people find you?
They can follow me at Keith Foster Kid on Twitter and Instagram. Come check out a show. I'm doing this show at Old Town Improv Company called Book Club. We have two shows a month every other Saturday. It is an improvised book genre. Usually it's kind of movie genre too, because who reads books anymore? We just did improvised fairy tale. This month we are doing coming of age movies or coming of age books,
as it were.
Yeah, so come check out a show there. It'd be a lot of fun. I think that's all I have to plug in the immediate future. Check out my website, www.keithfosterkid.com. Also, if you're interested in going to Old Town Improv Company, you can check out their website at oldtownimprov.com.
Cool. And be sure to check out our friends who are also making podcasts of their own. Patrick, who lent us his hot take this week, you can find once again at his comic book podcast, Make Dad Read Comics, that he does every week with his father, and his education multi-topic podcast, Almost Educational, which I should be a guest on here shortly. I think we are going to be doing a show this weekend, and that'll go up sometime next week. Also listen to Rod and Denise and / Rod and guest Rod and Moksha at the Listening Party. They're still doing their thing. And check out Mike Fallick over at Let's Start a Cult, Bill and Brian at the Great Albums Podcast, and you have people too.
Yeah, check out Adam Connie's podcast, The Adamant Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Also check out Campfire Shit Show with Bo Hufford and Meryl Klimau.
And I almost forgot, but didn't forget, Those Happy Places by Alice and Buddy is their code names. And you can check that out on the iTunes. Oh, that's a thing I didn't mention. All the places you can find our podcast: iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Google Play, Windows Podcast Network, and Pocket Cast. I'm sure you can find all those other podcasts at those places too. So that's the show.
Yeah, and we are Groot.
Bye.
Oh, wait. I am Gosling.
Bye.